Welcome to the Informed Pregnancy and Parenting Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Elliot Berlin, and you have tuned in to the after episode of a before and after birth story. My guests today are Sarah Betterman and her doula, Catherine Deep. Welcome back to the podcast.
Hi.
Thank you.
Last time I saw you, Catherine and I looked the same.
And I didn't.
You didn't look the same. So all I can say is congratulations.
I don't know
your details of your birth story. I deliberately waited till now to find out with everybody else. All I know is that it was your second birth, and your first birth you had planned for this fairly natural vaginal birth experience, and it did not go that way.
Nope.
And you also, just as a side note, didn't really leave yourself a lot of space for deviating on your path. And
Right. So
when it didn't go that way, it hit you extra hard.
Yes, definitely.
And then you were all prego again and planning for another natural vaginal birth experience, but with leaving yourself more space so that if it would go down the flow chart in a different direction, detour, that hopefully it would not hit you as hard.
Yes, flex and flow.
Flex and
flow. Like Sarah Levon taught me.
Oh, very nice.
Yeah, I like that one.
I'm going to have to apply that to my life in many ways.
Yeah, totally. It's useful in general, not just birth.
So when we left you, you were towards the end of the pregnancy. How was the last bit of your pregnancy?
It was terrible. Oh, my God. I was so uncomfortable. I think I saw you
every couple of hours.
In like the last week, I was in so much discomfort. It was really hard to sit on the floor and play with my son. I was sitting on a yoga bolster and I was moving around. And I had contractions every night for a week, which is called prodromal labor.
Yes.
My husband still has a hard time saying it, but now it's just a joke. He mispronounces it on purpose. So I had prodromal labor for a week. Every afternoon, night, I would have contractions for a while. And then we'd be like, is this it? And then it would stop. So I found it really anxiety producing. I'm a control freak. And I was just like, what is happening? When is this going to happen?
But I would add one footnote. I was seeing you a lot because you were in a lot of discomfort. But you always had a smile, at least in the office.
I think it's just because I like you.
Smile, maybe. You're always so upbeat about it.
And you make my body
it.
Feel good.
I try. But still, you would come in and you'd be like, I feel terrible. I feel miserable. And you would smile and you're upbeat. You made me feel bad about myself is what I'm trying to say.
Well, that was not my intention.
No, I'm just kidding. And then also, you're a very fit person. You're very active. So
Super fit.
Yeah. And so all the more so when your body's forcing you to be less active, for a lot of people, it just shuts the mind down, too. And you just kept it going.
It has
so
a bad.
Kudos.
Thank you. When I can't exercise, it has a bad mental impact on me for sure.
Yeah. That's how I feel when I do exercise. But it's a totally separate issue.
I was also very anxious about when the baby was going to come because with Theo, I went to 42 weeks. Well, I went into labor at 41 plus 5 and he was born on 42. And I was like, oh, my God, I can't do that again. So, I mean, Catherine and I were talking a lot. I was like, I got to get this baby out of me.
So when did the prodromal, the episodes of starting to have what felt like labor contractions, how many weeks you were
I was on? 39 weeks when they started.
At nighttime?
Yeah, it was always late afternoon, evening, not usually in the middle of the night, but as the day wore on. I'd be lying in bed watching TV with Ben and I'd be having contractions. Yeah.
And we'd be texting.
And are you happy? Because hey, you wanted it to happen earlier.
I was happy, but it kind of felt like a tease too. I was like, when is it going to be the real deal? And I was secretly hoping that she was going to be a lot earlier than Theo, but I didn't want to count on that because I had such a hard time. I mean, I waited the full time with Theo, but it was very difficult emotionally. And I was just like, I don't want to do it again.
Yeah.
Please don't punish me like that.
No, because in that moment, hours feel like days.
Yeah.
And days feel like weeks.
Yeah. And then there was also some pressure from the midwives to not go to 42 again. They had a lot of feelings about me not going to 42 again.
Not going to 42, inducing before 42?
Yeah.
Or, otherwise, how do you not go to 42?
And kill me or induce me. I'm just kidding. Induce me.
Okay.
So they were thinking 41.
Your birth team this time was midwives at a hospital.
Yes.
A group of midwives at a hospital. Catherine, your doula.
Yes.
Yeah. It was actually the same birth team as last time.
Your partner.
Yeah.
Ben.
Yes, Ben.
So the midwives, were you calling them, hey, I'm having contractions, or didn't really get to that point?
I don't remember, to be honest.
I don't think so.
I emailed with them a little bit, but I don't think I called, no. because I was like, this isn't it. And then kept just stopping.
Peter out.
Yeah.
Vaginal labor is so frustrating.
It's really frustrating.
It's so hard and so common in multips for sure.
What's a multip?
Yeah, what's a multip, Kendra?
Someone that has had multiple pregnancies.
Oh.
Yeah. A lot of things are different in a multip. Like, your breasts and hicks are really painful.
Yeah.
They're really intense. Mm-hmm. When the first time I had breasts and hicks when I was pregnant with Leo, it was like nothing. This time I'd be like, like, it really was intense.
You really had to let it go.
Yeah, it was a powerful feeling. I was like, wow, my uterus knows what to do.
Were you, during that week, do you know if they checked your cervix? Were they monitoring, like?
They did because I asked them to.
Okay.
And they don't do that automatically. It's not standard protocol. It's kind of if you want them to.
You like data.
And I do like data. I was unsure if I'd want to be checked at the end, and then I decided to get checked. So I got checked at 38 and 39. And it was great. I actually found it really, like, exciting and encouraging because I had dilated and effaced both times. And the second time I was, you remember? I think I was 3 centimeters and 50% effaced at 39 weeks. So I was like, wow, something's happening in there.
Yeah.
But then I
only
thought,
7 to go.
But then I thought, oh, it doesn't really mean anything. Your cervix isn't a crystal ball.
In terms of timing.
In terms of timing.
That would be really uncomfortable if your cervix was a crystal ball.
Yes, that would be. Well, I kind of already had a crystal ball up in there.
That's
so
true.
The head. But for me, it was exciting to have the information and know that something was happening.
Yeah.
And that maybe I wouldn't be going as long as last time.
I just feel like it's sort of lucky that you did progress, because I wonder what would have happened if they're like, nah, you're sealed shut.
I would have been like, oh,
you
crap.
Would have been really frustrated.
Yeah.
And you also were losing your mucus plug.
I was losing my mucus plug. I lost it over
a
week again.
Oh, in bits and pieces?
Mm-hmm. Oh. I lost it over a week with Theo, too. Mm-hmm. Apparently, I'm not like a fall-out-at-once kind of person.
No. I see you as a little more controlling than that.
Yeah, I hold on to it. Little bit.
Yeah. Can we give up all at once?
Yeah.
So when did that change? When did it become more?
So my due date was on a Sunday, and I went to a party at my friend's house in the daytime. And everyone was like, wow, you look amazing. What are you doing today? And they were all guessing, like, when it was going to happen, and I was just getting really annoyed because you can't know, and I didn't want to feel any pressure. So I was like, it's not happening anytime soon, and I was all mad. And I went home, and, like, Ben and I were talking at night, and I said, I'm never going to have this baby, and I was really emotional. I was upset. I was like, I'm so uncomfortable. I can't do this anymore. And then I went to sleep for, like, 3 hours maybe, because sleeping at that point was horrible.
Did those contractions start coming back?
And then it just, bam, it was like a Mack truck.
Oh, so different than what you had previously.
I woke up with like this super long, painful contraction, and I was like, oh my God, this is it. And I got up to go to the bathroom, and I was like, this is totally it. So I had been sleeping in the guest room because I couldn't get comfortable. I had been sleeping in the guest room for months. I just couldn't get comfortable in bed with Ben. And, like, I had a lot of pillows and he had a lot of pillows. It was just too complicated. And he wakes up really early. And so I've been sleeping in the guest room. So I woke up in the guest room. And then I slowly went into our room. But I tried not to wake him up. I went into the bathroom. I, like, turned the lights on really dim. And I started filling the bath. And then he woke up. Or maybe he didn't wake up because he never wakes up. He sleeps through everything. So I stayed in the bath for a little while, and then I was like, oh my God, this is really intense. And I felt like my contractions were really close together, because they were.
Were you guys
right
texting?
From the outset? Not yet.
Not yet?
So then I woke Ben up, and I was like, I think it's happening. He's like, oh. And so, but then he jumped into action, and he, like, got in the tub with me and rubbed my back a little bit and kind of tried to help. And then we called Catherine because he was timing the contractions. They were quite close together. And I was positive for group B strep. So they wanted me to come in a little sooner than what they normally recommend to get the antibiotics. And I had mixed feelings about it. But Ben was like, really, we were doing that. So I was just like, okay, I'm not gonna fight about this one. And I think the midwives had said to come in when I was like 4 or 5 1 1.
So contractions, let's say, every 4 or 5 minutes, lasting about a minute apiece
for an hour
or more.
Right. And mine were like 2 or 3.
Oh.
2 or 3 1 1.
Oh, wow.
So we were like, whoa.
From the get-go? Oh, really?
And I think it was all the prodromal labor. So looking back, I'm really grateful for all the prodromal labor, but it sucked at the time.
Yeah. It's your thing, not all at once.
Yes, just like
bit by bit. A little bit now.
And so then we called Catherine.
I'm curious, did the tub feel good to you to be in there with the contractions?
Somewhat. It was
too intense.
I mean, I just felt like I couldn't move around enough. It was like very,
oh, you need
very
space.
Confined. Yeah. I don't know what time we called you. Maybe Ben wrote it down. I think it was like 3 in the morning, maybe. Something like that.
I remember I got there around 4.
Of course, it was the middle of the night, because why would I ever call Catherine like, the during the daytime?
Well, Catherine never gets phone calls during the daytime.
Yeah, I was like, wait.
You go to T-Mobile, and it's like, what? Well, this girl only gets calls from 1 a.m. to 5 a.m.
But I think exactly. You said, let me listen to her, mm-hmm. and you asked me some questions, and Ben answered some questions, and then you were like, I think we should meet at the hospital.
Oh, you didn't go to the house?
No, this time she didn't come to the house because it was like going.
Catherine, is it because of what you're hearing on the phone? Like, do you hear her having?
Yeah, it's just you're listening to, you know, sort of how she's working through contractions, what kind of sound she's making.
What kind of sounds were you making?
Like a wild animal.
Oh, I mean, I don't know. I mean, saying some people go inside.
I mean, I got pretty. Yeah,
you were primal.
I would say.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then do you listen to what kind of sound Ben's making?
He was pretty quiet.
He was pretty quiet. Wrist too hard. And then also the information on the contraction.
Yeah, I mean, you're kind of weighing out multiple things. Mm-hmm. And just even, you know, you can't base it on the first labor. So
no.
You're completely basing
it
on what's
happening this
time.
The first labor was messed up.
Because the first one, it started, it was like every 2 minutes.
Yeah.
Like it started like out of the gate like that.
Mm-hmm. But then it got all wacky.
And then it kind of went all over the place, probably because of position.
Mm-hmm.
Are you in your head at this point? Because you're an analytical person.
Yeah, definitely.
So are you thinking?
My biggest fear was that we'd get to the hospital and I like hadn't dilated any further and they were going to like send me home or something.
Boy.
I really just wanted this to be it and to like get this party started. I mean,
I
the party
think
has
they would
started.
Have sent you home.
No.
Not but the second labor.
Right. And not with the GBS situation.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
I guess we'll have to wait to find out what happens until after this break. That just seems like a natural cliffhanger. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. I have an incredible offer for you for my friends at Needed. An astounding 95% of women aren't meeting their omega-3 needs. Omega-3 fatty acids, especially DHA and EPA, are crucial for both mother and baby. They support brain and eye health, maternal mood, immunity, and much more. But it can be hard to get enough omega-3 from diet alone, especially during pregnancy when many people are averse to eating fish. And if you've ever taken a fish oil pill, you know just how unpleasant that can be. That's why I'm excited to share that my friends at Needed have revolutionized the omega-3 supplement with 2 different options designed specifically for mamas. An omega-3 powder that blends into smoothies and a pill option that tastes like fresh citrusy bergamot. Both are sustainably sourced from vegan algae, not fish. Both are great options for nausea and sensitive-prone mamas. Needed's omega-3 powder is delivered in liposomes, nature's very cool way of protecting and delivering omega-3, just like in breast milk. Needed's omega-3 is clinically proven to be 5 times better absorbed than fish oil pills. The powder is mild-tasting, and it pairs great with Needed's prenatal multi-powder and collagen protein powder in a daily smoothie. If powder isn't your thing, Needed's got you covered with those omega-3 plus capsules, which have a pleasant citrus flavor. Needed is sharing an awesome pre-order discount just for my listeners. Buy 2, get 1 free on either omega-3 option, powder or capsules. You can stock up on either one or try them both. With this exclusive discount, use code 3BERLIN, the number 3BERLIN at thisisneeded.com. Put 3 omega-3s in your cart. Use the code number 3BERLIN at thisisneeded.com. Buy 2, get 1 free. Welcome back to the Informed Pregnancy Podcast. We're talking to Sarah Betterman and Catherine Deeb. So, labor starts with a bang. Catherine's on the phone saying, whoa, that sounds like it's time to meet at the hospital.
Yeah.
So you meet at the hospital.
Ben's excited.
Yeah,
did you get there around the same time?
She sounded like you were active.
Yeah. The car ride was terrible.
Bumpy?
Just having confined? To sit there and
horrible.
Try to
always
have
horrible.
I was like, you better drive faster, Ben. Okay, but he was like, not the... too fast. I don't want to have an
no
accident.
Pressure.
He's like, what do you want me to do?
People do Uber, and the poor Uber guy's like, I gotta get a job. So wait a second. So just out of curiosity, mm-hmm. are you in the front seat, back seat?
I was in the front because we took my car. And we had a car seat, like a huge convertible car seat, and a car seat base in the
in
back.
In the back, so there's no room
so for it's either the front seat or the trunk.
Sitting? Are you sitting?
I was sitting, and I had my seatbelt on, but I was kind of like writhing around.
Yeah, it sounds it was really, awful.
But luckily, it was a short drive. It was a lot shorter than the drive with the
At 4 yeah. o'clock in the morning.
Yeah. Well, I was wide awake.
No traffic.
Yeah.
So what happens when you get there? Your concern is no progress.
Yeah, my concern was just that things weren't going to be going the way I hoped they were going.
Mm-hmm.
So we got
there. Was Catherine there when you got there?
I don't remember.
Pretty soon after.
Pretty soon after. I don't remember what happened when we got there. They asked me some questions. We went right into a room. I wasn't in triage, which was really nice. When I was in labor with Theo, I had to start out in triage, and my water broke in triage. It was terrible.
No triage because...
They had a room
just
open.
Just ready right away?
And
they
right
can tell
room.
From the parking lot that you were already in labor.
I don't know. They just weren't super busy yet. And then I was very uncomfortable and, you know, I had to sit still for the monitor and the lady was asking me all these questions. She was very nice and patient. I was like, hold on, because I couldn't talk when I was having contractions.
And they have so many questions.
Yeah, and they have so many questions.
And forms.
And then... I got checked. I have this written down. And I was almost 5 centimeters, 90% effaced, and -1 station.
Okay, I'm excited.
So I was pumped. I was like, woo! I was like, I'm halfway
like, just
there.
Right when you said, I'm like, yes!
Yeah. Yeah. So I was like, woo, I'm halfway there. This is great. And
the long half.
Yeah.
The really, yeah.
But it wasn't that long.
Well, I'm just saying, for me, the first 5 centimeters being the long half.
Yeah. But so, I'm saying the whole thing was not long from start
the time
to
we
finish.
Got in, yeah.
And so then I labored for a while, and they had to do the antibiotics. That was super annoying.
So you'd have the IV and all that
I had
stuff.
A really cool nurse who, like, didn't make me stay on the continuous monitoring for quite a while.
Oh, that's nice.
Some of the midwives were not happy about that.
Oh, really?
Yeah. But I thought it was awesome. Because for BBAC, they prefer you to have continuous monitoring because...
From the time you get there.
They have wireless monitors, so you're not chained in any way. But it's still annoying because...
It's the belts.
Like, it slips down if you're in the shower and moving around, and it's like...
Oh, they have Bluetooth?
Yeah, they have the Monica's.
They have a wireless.
Oh,
yeah.
That's nice.
It attaches to this pole, so you kind of just take the pole with you like a...
Into the shower?
Like out, right outside the shower.
Oh, were you on a telemetry?
Yeah.
Not on the wireless.
I don't know. I don't remember.
Because usually in the
shower,
they put
I remember there being a pole.
This...
Maybe the pole was for the antibiotics.
The pole was for the antibiotics.
Yes. I honestly have no
that
idea.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, okay, wait, pole, wireless.
Yeah, so I don't know.
Because this is wireless.
You
the
were dragging around
doesn't
the
go in
antibiotics.
The
I was dragging around the antibiotic thing, and I was yelling at it. I was like, God, this thing is terrible. But yeah, I spent a ton of time in the shower. Mm-hmm. Catherine told Ben that I'm one of her, I don't know what you said exactly, but that I like water more than any other client you've ever had. Something
oh, I think
in that
I,
vein.
You logged more shower hours.
Yeah, a lot of shower hours.
Shower hour.
Shower hour. I do like to take long showers just in general, so I guess it makes sense.
The first birth, probably like 20 hours.
Oh, that. Yeah, a lot of time in
the
shower.
In the shower.
Turned into a raisin. But I was having all back labor with Theo.
So it was good
so
to be
it was
in there.
Just, it was the only thing that really helped. I don't really remember the whole process. It was kind of a blur. I remember just being in a lot of pain, and I remember spending a lot of time in the shower. There was this bench in the shower. I kind of used that a little bit. Then Catherine tied a sheet over the rod that went around the shower, and I was like hanging with that kind of in a squat.
For some traction.
That was pretty cool. I spent time on the ball.
In the shower?
We couldn't do it in the shower. It was like too slippery and awkward, but we did it outside the shower.
So you're in and out.
But mostly in.
Mostly in.
And mostly in the bathroom.
And mostly in the bathroom.
Through the labor.
Yeah. Mm. And
I did a birth at that hospital. It's just coming back to me right now. And she just wanted to be in the shower the whole time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But she was having back labor, so she really wanted counter pressure and massage in between. And I was waiting for her to come out, waiting.
Yeah.
And she just didn't want to come out because she loved being in there. And I was fine. I was just like, you know, I'll just wait. And then finally her husband's like, she said, do you mind going in there to do the body while she's there? And I was like, I don't mind, but, you know, is she comfortable?
Are you okay?
She's like, she just wants your hands in there. I'm like, okay.
Okay.
So, but to make it a little bit more modest, I turned off the lights in there.
Right.
And I put on these little tea lights to glow. And it was like an hour. It was great. Like once we were able to get her back to relax, things progressed really nicely and she was comfortable. And then I just remember my knee was like, one knee was up like on the ledge for the shower because I was reaching
in. So uncomfortable.
Half of my body was pretty wet at that point. From just not directly in it, but she was holding that wand that sometimes just
the
hits
spray.
You. Yeah. And then also I just remember my contact lenses were wanting to jump out of my eyeballs and I didn't know why. I'm like, I wasn't that tired. And then I realized what happened. When I shut off the light, it also shuts off the vent.
Oh, so super steamy in there.
It was so steamy. I didn't realize. And then she was like, I was like, how am I going to get out of here? Because everybody else was sleeping. Her prodromal was like 7 days of nonstop.
Oh, that's terrible.
And so everyone who had supported her early in the labor was falling asleep.
Yeah.
And so I didn't want to wake them and I want to leave her. But I was like, I'm not going to be able to do this much longer. And finally she's like, Dr. B, I'm like, what? She's like, I feel like I have to go to the bathroom. And I was like,
oh,
that's amazing. And I even said that. I'm like, oh, that's so great. She's like, no, I have to pee. And I'm going to pee in the shower, but I don't really want you in here. So that was my break. I got to go outside.
Speaking of peeing, it is so hard to pee when you're in labor.
Is it?
Yeah, it's miserable. It's so hard to, like, let it go.
Everybody's making you a drink, and you got the IV for
Yeah, and it's so hard to, like, let it go. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I struggled a lot with that.
I didn't mean to steal your story.
So, that's okay.
You're in labor. You're in and out.
Yeah. So here are some stats.
Yes.
Ben took his, like, spreadsheet notes. My water broke. So when I got checked and the 5 centimeters, 90% negative one station, that was 4 a.m. Mm-hmm. 8:11 a.m., very precise. I was 6 to 7 centimeters, negative one. She was in a good position and my water had broken. After my water broke, it was like really intense.
Where did it break?
It broke on top of the ball. And
not
I was like, this kind of feels nice. I mean, it's kind of gross, but it was like warm and I don't know. It kind of felt good. Then I was checked at 10:20 a.m., I had been feeling, like, really pushy for a while, and I was, like, grunting, and it was very primal. So they checked me again. I was 9 centimeters post-contraction, 8 to 9 centimeters before the contraction. She said the baby was not too big, which, not that Theo was huge, but he was on the higher end of average.
How big was he?
He was 8'4".
Okay. And when she says not too big, because she can feel the head now?
The head, I guess.
Okay.
I don't really know. I don't know. I don't really know how they know.
She's saying the head's not too big. Yeah.
Probably. Although it was sizable. So
but
I don't know.
But not too big.
But I mean, it worked out okay. But yeah, it was like I couldn't stop what was happening in my body. Like
pushing?
I wasn't even fully dilated and I felt this like incredible urge to push. I just wanted to get the baby out of me. It was so intense. It was kind of terrifying. I wrote to Britta because I met with her before the birth to do some emotional work.
This is a PhD childbirth educator, all around amazing person, Britta Bushnell.
Yes.
Who we have an episode with.
Yeah, episode's awesome.
Called Mythologies, Metaphors, and Childbirth.
So I printed out the email I wrote to her because it's really the most I've written about the birth in general. And I wrote to her at the end. I said I thought of her because I was talking to friends and Catherine after. And I said I definitely felt like I was at the edge of death a bunch of times.
Oh, wow.
Because with Britta, we talked about how birth is kind of a descent into the underworld and then you come back up.
Yes.
You're kind of like reborn. And I said, particularly during pushing, I found it really insane, really intense, very scary. It's just like something's happening in you that you can't control. And it's painful, but it kind of feels good. And I don't even know how to explain it. It's the most intense feeling.
Yeah.
Are you still in your mind? In your cognitive head?
I mean, maybe a little. I'm a very cerebral person. Not a lot. I don't know. What do you think?
I would say more than some people at that point, but that's because of who.
That's my personality.
That's you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it wasn't a hindrance.
No, she wasn't.
I just wondered if the opposite, if you're like, because you wanted this so much.
Yeah.
If you're in your brain, you're like, this is it. This is what I wanted.
Yeah, I was trying, I think I was kind of trying to process what was going on a little bit because I wanted to experience it. I wanted to remember it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I didn't get that last time. So it was very overwhelming in many ways.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
But I did have a fear, I will say, that like I would get to pushing and I would be pushing for a long time and it wouldn't happen.
Yeah, I wondered if your brain would also go there.
My brain totally went there. I was like, I gotta get this baby
out. It definitely went there.
Like I was panicking a little. I was like, I gotta get this baby out of me so fast.
Mm-hmm. Was your pushing guided or just based on what you felt?
I mean, it was more guided than I had expected, I guess.
Coaching?
Not like an epidural.
No,
not like with that kind of, mm-hmm. not like that kind of guided. I think it was more that we had a little tricky, the fit situation.
Yeah.
So there was a lot of, right. I need you to turn this way.
Oh,
I need
get into you different to, positions.
Yeah. Yeah. Like first my torso was like against the back of the bed and I was kind of on hands and knees, but like at an angle, if you will. And then I switched from that because that didn't really feel good. So then I tried to do the side. And that, I it's so crazy. I remember I was talking to you about it. I pulled a muscle in my inner thigh, mm-hmm. groin, I don't know, right before she was born. And so when I was on my side, it was bothering that. And I panicked and I was like, I can't do this. Yeah. So I switched to the other side, but then that wasn't really good either. And then I ended up kind of on my back. And I remember saying, I don't want to be on my back. But they all felt like, and I wasn't really on my back the way you think about being on your back. That's what Catherine told me. But I ended up in a position that I didn't think I would be in, but it actually felt good and it worked.
Mm-hmm.
And I wasn't on my back like in lithotomy with my legs up in stirrups and flat on my back. I was kind of like, I feel
almost
like my butt was kind of like up
and,
in the air.
But like turned to one side and like legs like way back.
Yeah.
If only there was video.
I'm glad there's not.
Well, I just even meant of Catherine's description of it.
I mean, I'm so glad there's not. We have pictures. It's more than enough. But the pushing ended up not being that long. Like I pushed for like at 10:32 a.m. I was 10 centimeters and the head was visible. And I felt it, and I was like, holy crap,
yeah,
that's her head. And it was covered in hair, just like Theo's. I was like, another hairy offspring. And then she was born 30 minutes later at 11:02 a.m. So it was not really very long in the pushing. And the midwives, they did like the mineral oil and trying
Tell
to lube that
tear.
Area up, which was extremely uncomfortable, but very helpful.
Oh, no tearing?
Well, not in my perineum. I had a bunch of other things happen, which I'll tell you about. Do you want me to talk about that?
Oh, well, we're going to come back in a minute and just talk about that and everything that came after.
Okay.
I just wonder, were you in that moment?
Yeah, definitely.
What was going on in your cognitive head?
Like when she was born?
Yeah.
Well, the first thing I said was, I did it. And then I said, I'm so glad that's over. And then I told Catherine I loved her. Aww. Like before I told Ben I loved him, which is kind of funny. And we like Catherine and I had a moment and then Ben and I had a moment. And Maya was on me. That's my daughter. And they were rubbing her. And she pooped everywhere. So there was like black meconium all over me and her, which was kind of hilarious. Aww. We were laughing about it. And she was just on me, and it was awesome. Yeah. It was like everything that I had wanted last time that I didn't get, so it was great.
Oh, that's so beautiful.
It made all the terrible pain worth it.
That's really special.
Yeah.
All right. Then some things happen.
Mm-hmm.
That seems like
another cliffhanger. So I always have cliffhangers for you.
Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Informed Pregnancy Podcast. We are talking to Sarah Betterman and Catherine Deem. Congrats.
Thank you.
I'm so happy for you.
Thank you.
So what happened afterwards? Baby came out. You would think almost end of story.
Yeah, you would think. No one ever gets it easy. So there was a lot going on, and I had a tear on my labia, which was not really a big deal, but I was also bleeding a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone was very calm. But they basically said, you know, this is more bleeding than we're comfortable with. And I'm trying to figure out what's going on. Then they discovered I had a significant cervical laceration.
Mm.
And so they thought maybe the bleeding was from that. But long story short, I ended up going to the OR.
No.
Yeah.
Yes.
So I got it all.
Oh, wow.
So I went to the OR. I was super happy.
Was your placenta came out?
Yeah. It was after the placenta came out that all the
and they just couldn't blood stop the
was
bleeding?
Happening,
so
if
much
I remember
blood,
correctly.
Were they trying with meds to get it to stop bleeding?
I mean, they did give me the Pitocin. She'd given me fentanyl, which was amazing. Mm-hmm. I don't remember why. Oh, maybe for the tear, for the stitches.
Yeah.
I don't know. I was super happy. I felt like I was high. I didn't even care.
Well, you were
I mean, I didn't know that I could be, like, bleeding out. But I wasn't. So.
And you said you were fine with it.
And I was.
Because I was worried about her going back to
I was fine with it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
After the last time.
It was a positive experience, I'll tell you. So, I mean, as positive as that can be. So it was unexpected. So they basically said, we want to take you to the OR to fix this cervical laceration. We think that's where this heavy bleeding is coming from. Cervical lacerations bleed a lot, apparently. I was like, okay. So the anesthesiologist came in, and then we all went to the OR. And they gave me a spinal, which felt fantastic because I didn't feel anything down there. But I had to lie there for a while. Well, one of the OBs who works with the midwife group, she sewed up my cervix. And she had to put this thing called a Bakery in my uterus. It's like a balloon that they fill up with saline, and it helps the uterus contract and, like, stop the bleeding. And then they packed – do you want all the gory details?
Sure.
They had to, like, pack my vagina with all this gauze. I swear to God, it was, like, 10 feet of gauze in there. So it was all packed in there. And I had a catheter, like a urinary catheter, and then I had this tube also coming out that was attached to the Bakery, to the balloon thing. So
coming out vaginally?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, yeah, because it was in my uterus.
Right.
But then it was like taped to my leg. It was really interesting. But I didn't feel any of it because I was all numb.
Yeah.
And my favorite nurse, the nurse.
The naughty nurse who let you know.
No, not the naughty nurse.
A different nurse.
I mean, maybe she was a little naughty. Like, there was some confusion about whether I was supposed to be drinking or not. And she, like, didn't really act on that because I was like, I can't do this if I'm not drinking water. I'm not going to not drink water because I might have a C-section. Sorry.
Oh, during labor?
Yeah.
Oh, that.
She was really cool.
That was a little frustrating.
Yeah. I complained about that at my postpartum appointment.
Good.
But sometimes they let people eat.
I know. I don't know.
VBAC protocol can be a little.
It's a little dicey.
A little conservative.
Mm. Yeah. And I don't even know if it's practice-wide or if I think it depends on who the anesthesiologist is that day, who the midwife is. I don't know.
Lots of rules.
A lot of rules. I wasn't following the rules anyway.
But experiences, because I do see sometimes people eating and the nurses are not making a big deal about it.
She didn't make a big deal about it. She was a really cool nurse. She was like, oh, she's just been sipping water.
Yeah, she was great.
She was great.
And she was there when
Maya was born. She was there during pushing for all of it. So she came into the OR with me, and we basically just chatted the entire time.
Oh, that's nice.
It was great.
So then the bleeding stopped.
I mean, overall, like, my uterus had the balloon in it. They had all that packing in my vagina. And then I just went back to the room, and we were all happy. Like, Ben and Catherine were hanging out with the baby, and we all just kind of hung out and talked about it. I was really happy. I was on that oxytocin high, and it was awesome. And the whole OR thing didn't even take a long time the next day.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So.
But then you're not numb anymore.
Correct. So the first night was pretty uncomfortable because I stopped being numb. Like, I had a catheter and then the balloon and the packing, and I wasn't allowed out of bed. So it was kind of like a C-section in terms of that part of the recovery because I wasn't allowed out of bed. And they were very worried about my blood. I lost 1,600 cc's, which is a lot of blood.
Mm.
And so they had to take labs and make sure my levels were going back up. They were giving me – I don't even remember what they were giving me. They were giving me some stuff. I ended up staying longer than a normal
– 24 hours.
Yeah. I had her Monday morning, and I left on Wednesday early afternoon.
Okay. So halfway between vaginal surgery and hospital stay.
Because they wanted to make sure that I was okay, that I wasn't faint. You know, that my strength was back up. The crazy thing is I never felt sick the way someone normally feels sick from that kind of blood loss.
Mm-hmm.
Like when I
didn't feel weak and dizzy and tired.
I felt amazing. Mm. I felt so good. And
I don't know. Maybe you do better with less blood.
Maybe just suck a lot of the blood out of me. I don't know. Maybe it's because I was so fit in my pregnancy. I don't know.
It's true. You could probably do more on less.
Yeah, maybe.
Than other people. Not even kidding.
And then when I got up the next day after they took everything out and I was like allowed to get up and go to the bathroom. I didn't feel faint. I felt a little wobbly just because I hadn't stood up in a day, but I was totally fine. One of the midwives came in to check on me. She's like, you look amazing. You don't look like someone who lost a few liters of blood. And I was like, cool.
Do you hate balloons now?
No.
You still like balloons?
Okay. No, I never saw the balloon.
Oh.
Yeah.
Just knowing it was a balloon.
And I had great nurses. Like the nurse the first night was wonderful and all the nurses were great.
And you got to stay in L&D.
And I got to stay in L&D for longer, which was nice.
Nicer.
Because they were very attentive and took really good care of me.
Yes.
But the postpartum is never quite as good. It's just kind of how it goes,
I guess. It's like transitioning you out.
Yeah. It's like we're phasing you out here.
Once you get home, how was your postpartum experience this time?
I mean, so much better than last time. Last time I was very depressed and upset about the birth. Just a lot of my expectations hadn't been met. I was struggling with all of that. And I felt so helpless physically because I was in a lot of pain. It was quite terrible. And also just the mess of having a new baby and you don't know what you're doing. Your partner doesn't know what they're doing. No one really prepares you well for it. You're hormonal. You're crazy. You know, it's just, you're not sleeping. It's just a lot. For me, I had a lot of anxiety about having another child, and I actually struggled with the decision to have another child, but ultimately I decided I really wanted my son to have a sibling, and I don't want to have one child. But I struggled with it a lot because of everything that had happened. I was like, I don't know if I can go through that again. Also, I think I didn't appreciate how much going through it had changed me.
In what way?
Like, I'm already a mom.
Wow.
And I'm a different person than I was before I had Theo. Like a very different person. Not fundamentally. Well, actually probably pretty fundamentally. I just think having been through all of that, and especially having been through a hard time having Theo, it's kind of like I've seen it all. And the knowledge I had, the experience I had, I was so much calmer this time. I just felt like I know what I'm doing, not in a cocky way, but in like a peaceful way.
Mm.
And I also did a lot of things to set myself up for success this time.
What kind of things?
Like I made sure we had a full-time nanny well before the baby came because my husband works a lot and I just knew I would need that support. So that was amazing. Not only did she take care of the baby, but she took care of me a ton. She made me food.
Oh, that's nice.
She would make me these amazing snack plates, make me meals, like – one day she rubbed my feet, which was like the greatest day of my life.
I just had a baby shower and they were asking all these weird questions. And I said, if you could get any of the things that are made for babies that babies get to have, you know, in adult version, what would you want? And I was between the Papasan swing. I think that would be really great for when I'm stressed out. And having a nanny, but not in a creepy way, but just all the things that you just said.
It's like, amazing.
Oh, you look a little hungry. Let me get you a snack plate or rub your feet or you should take a nap.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I was going to say it just enabled me to really let go more and to know that I could leave the baby with her and she was safe and she would get me if she needed to eat. So I was able to nap so much more and just really take better care of myself. And also she comes early. So like Ben goes to work very early every day. We're not awake. And so she would come, and if Maya and I were still sleeping, like, she would get Theo up. And so I could just keep sleeping for a little while, which was incredible.
That's really
because
good.
I was exhausted.
Sure.
Especially in the first month. So that was a great decision. And then I decided to go back on antidepressant, anti-anxiety medication the day after Maya was born. Fantastic decision.
Did you pre-decide that?
I pre-decided it with my psychiatrist. Mm-hmm. I just really wanted to stave off the bad PPD.
Mm-hmm.
And it definitely helped.
It's interesting because many people say, moms in particular, that the transition from one to two is in ways harder than from not having it to the first one.
I think it depends on your experience with the first.
Well, there's a lot of things that change, right? So your birth experience was very different. But also, I think having that help, you know, one of the things that makes it so hard is
if you're
up all night with a baby, a newborn, or many times throughout the night, you still at 6 a.m. have this raring to go toddler.
Yeah.
You know? And if you don't have the energy, you start to feel like, I'm not good, I can't do this.
Yeah.
But with that kind of support, if you can hack it, it really helps.
And I still felt like that sometimes.
Yeah.
But not in the same way as I would have if I had been doing it all by myself.
I still feel like that. My kids are like 9 to 15 years old.
Yeah.
I feel like I'm not there enough.
Also, my mom was in town. She planned to stay for a couple months, and I tasked her with helping more with Theo, my son.
Mm-hmm.
And so she would, like, pick him up from school every day. And I tasked her with making us a lot of food, especially dinner. Oh. And so she did that a lot. And I felt like she and I communicated about it much better this time to kind of say, like, this is what I want you to do. And are you okay with that? So that we were working together in a way that was productive.
I think that's also really important that not every relative who's going to help you is open to that.
Yeah.
But if they are, tell them how they can be most helpful. Yeah, otherwise, exactly. They're going to do what they think is most helpful, which might not be helpful at all.
Which isn't necessarily what you need.
Right.
Maybe you don't need someone to do the laundry. Maybe you just need someone to hold your baby so you can go take a nap.
Yeah.
So all of that was really good. And I don't know. I think it was just the experience of already having a child, already being a mom. I just felt so differently this time.
Do you still think if Catherine and Ben are around and something good happens, do you hug Catherine first still?
Or is that does smell really good. Maybe. It depends what it is.
Just wondering where we rank. You also do work and you volunteer work in the postpartum space. Tell me about that a little bit.
Yeah. After I recovered, if you will, from everything that I went through with Theo, I've been thinking about going back to school to become a therapist for a long time. I started taking some classes, and then I took two classes that are prerequisites for the program I'm probably going to do. And then I thought, oh, I should have some volunteer experience, and I thought it'd be great to volunteer in the postpartum field. When looking, asking around, I didn't really find much. So I ended up talking to my friend who works at UCLA in the Women's Life Center. It's a psychiatric clinic that treats pregnant and postpartum women, perinatal women. So she actually connected me with someone who volunteers with PSI, which stands for Postpartum Support International.
And also pounds per square inch.
And a lot of other things. Mm-hmm. It's also the air in your tire.
Yeah, pounds per square inch.
Oh, that's what that stands for. Okay, well, there you go. I did not know that. Duh. So she connected us, and long story short, I ended up becoming a coordinator for our PSI in LA, which has been an amazing experience.
What do you do as a coordinator?
Basically, women contact us, sometimes men, but mostly women contact us, and they can contact me by text, email, or phone call to help them find resources. We also, of course, offer support, so like a woman called me. I talked to her this morning. She kind of just told me what's going on with her. And we talked about what kind of resources she might find useful. And then it's my job to find those resources for her and send her the information. So we're basically like a middleman in the terrible postpartum / maternity care system that we have in this country, trying to connect people with the resources they need that they might not know about or that they might not be able to find on their own for whatever reason. That's our job.
Oh, that's great.
So mostly I find resources for support groups, therapy, and psychiatry. Yeah. And we have lists that we keep of certified providers or providers that we recommend. And I think at this point, all of them have done some sort of PSI training. Mm-hmm. There are different levels of training. And I really enjoy it. I like giving back in that way. And
it doesn't
really
surprise me at all that you having a tough experience, not only did you get up and brush yourself off and get past it, but that you would use that experience to help other people.
Yeah, thank you.
So, well.
Well.
There it is.
Yeah. Now I have two children.
I remember feeling that way after our second child came and thinking that was going to be it.
I will also add that I do think the birth made a huge difference for me. I know some people don't. I know it's not as important to them, maybe, to have the kind of birth that they imagine, or maybe they don't really care if they're getting epidural or not. But for me, it was amazing to have the birth that I had wanted. And it wasn't perfect, obviously. A bunch of things went wrong. Hmm. But it was the way I wanted overall. It was the outcome I wanted. And I really do think it made a huge difference in my mental health. I hope that our system can change to support women coming out of birth feeling good.
Yeah.
You know, whatever that means for them.
Yeah.
But to come out of it not traumatized, feeling good about what happened, feeling respected, feeling like they were in control, feeling like they were surrounded by amazing women who supported them in their process. And I just hope it can change from the way it is.
Hear, hear.
I love that.
And I forget sometimes because we have so much support for VBAC in this city.
But other places.
But like 15 miles out of the city, you can sometimes not find a provider and you go further away. People drive hundreds of miles to try to have a vaginal birth after cesarean.
So yes. I see a lot of that in my VBAC groups on Facebook.
Yeah.
People driving like 2 hours, 2.5 hours.
Oh, absolutely.
Staying with a tolerant provider because that's their only option and having to fight every inch of the way. It's just terrible.
Yeah.
I'm grateful to you both for joining us and Sarah for you sharing your personal story in general, but also because people are told once you have a cesarean, you always have to have a cesarean, and that was never a thing for you. So,
it's actually not true. I learned that in your podcast.
Oh, yeah, it's not true. It's not true at all. But it's something we didn't even talk about.
Yeah.
As like, oh, maybe you have to fight to have a VBAC. No, it was like, you know, let's give your body a shot and see what happens.
Yeah.
So, all right. At home, thanks for listening to our show. If you have any questions, you can always reach out to us at info@informedpregnancy.com.